Lease Theron in theaters today.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up today, the NRA convention is underway in Dallas. Both President Trump and Vice President Pence will be speaking there. We'll talk with the leading opponent of gun violence in just a moment. But first, two listener comments about yesterday's program when the topic was Rudy Giuliani's confirmation that President Trump's personal attorney paid hush money to a porn star to keep her quiet about an alleged affair with Trump just days before the presidential election. Here's what two listeners had to say.
This is Mike in Bradenton calling. I just wanted to say regarding Rudy Giuliani's performance on television last night, he has jumped the shark 110%. You know, his reputation is something that is just gone in the toilet as far as I'm concerned. This is a guy who's a former mayor of New York City who's now comparing the FBI to, like, you know, Nazi stormtroopers. And, you know, the fact that the president's lying about this porn star thing, it's like, you know what, I don't care about his sex life, but the fact that the man is immune to telling the truth about anything at any time is just so frightening and upsetting. This is not normal. And I'm a registered independent, not an elephant, not a donkey, but I'll tell you this much. If Barack Obama had done 10% of what Donald Trump has done, he would have been impeached and removed from office already. So enough is enough. Come on, America. We can do better than this.
This is Bill from Port Charlotte. I have two things to say about Rudy Giuliani. Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani are cut from the same cloth. If you remember that Rudy Giuliani was having an affair while he was in Gracie Mansion in the process of divorcing his sick wife. Also, last week or so, somebody on your show or Mr. Root's show said they're just like the mafia. They just lie without a bit, one iota of truth, and they just lie. Did you kill that guy? Oh, no, absolutely not, with the gun still in his hand. Anyway, God bless America. Thanks for what you do.
You have a couple of listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. Well, President Trump is set to give a speech today to the National Rifle Association as the debate over gun control escalates following February's deadly school shooting in Parkland, Florida. Last year, Trump told the group that attacks on the Second Amendment were over. After the shooting in Parkland, though, he accused lawmakers of being afraid of the powerful gun lobby. But after temporarily straying from the NRA's staunch opposition to tougher gun controls, he quickly backpedaled on that tough talk. We're going to talk about the NRA convention right now with Peter Ambler. He's the executive director of the Gabby Giffords Gun Violence Prevention Organization, and he joins us now on the phone. Peter Ambler, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Hey, Rob. How you doing?
I'm good. So what do you make of the president speaking at the NRA convention today?
Well, it's part of the political relationship between the NRA and Donald Trump. The NRA spent a record over $30 million in support of Donald Trump's candidacy during the 2016 election cycle. This will be his third consecutive appearance at the NRA convention. That's unprecedented. Before him, a sitting president hadn't spoken at that convention in decades. And, he said last year at the NRA's convention, you came through for me. Now I'm going to come through for you. And even as this country is sort of seeing an uptick in gun violence levels, even as we've seen three of this country's worst mass shootings in history, Donald Trump, true to form, has, even after some slight deviations, as you referenced, protected the gun industry's political agenda and their profits at the expense of our public safety.
What does the NRA represent to you these days? Is it a membership organization that promotes gun safety, or how would you describe what the NRA is?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because I think, 20, 30 years ago, the NRA could have looked, the American people in the face and said with a sort of degree of honesty that, in fact, that they did represent American gun owners. Today, that has shifted. you see an organization, the NRA, that's obsessed with protecting industry profits, an organization that's been taken over by lobbyists and then also by the sort of ideological right wing of the conservative movement. And, you know, you see that in sort of their influence, which is waning with every passing year. You know, decades ago, obviously, you would have seen the NRA have a great degree of influence with Democrats and Republicans alike. Today, you know, when it comes to politics, they're no more than a pillar of the, you know, conservative movement in the United States. They don't support Democrats, and that's why, you know, they're sort of facing plummeting approval ratings. They're facing, you know, significant losses of influence in our political system. Currently, you know, they have Donald Trump in the White House. They have Paul Ryan in the Speaker's chair. They have Mitch McConnell, you know, doing their bidding in the Senate. But they're extremely vulnerable to this political moment when Americans are finally fed up with the inaction that we've seen in the face of the gun violence crisis. And, you know, looking forward to 2018, eager to vote out these members of Congress who have taken political contributions year after year, tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars, and voted for industry profits over, you know, the safety of kids.
Our guest is Peter Ambler. He's executive director of Gabby Giffords' gun violence prevention organization, which is called Giffords, and we're talking about the NRA convention. The NRA in Florida, and I think around the country, had a record fundraising month in March. They say they've got 5 million members. You know, I don't think that they're going away. Do you think they have 5 million members? And if they're on the wane, why did they have such a good fundraising month in March?
You know, the NRA and the Hotel California have something in common. Sort of, you know, you can check in, but you can never leave. I'm bad at lyrics, but it's something like that, right?
Yeah.
You know, they boast 5 million members. You know, every other indicator of their membership would put them much lower. Their magazine circulation, for example, is just a fifth of that. They send their magazine to their members, so one would assume, therefore, that their actual active membership is much lower. And, you know, any bump in fundraising that they might see is a direct result of their sort of fear-mongering marketing strategy. Yes, they might have raised, I don't know, as you say, $1.5 million from their members, but that's because they're sort of using the shootings as opportunities to scare people into thinking that the government's coming for their guns. And this is a strategy that they've employed time and time again. Remember, Barack Obama was coming for everybody's guns. Lawful gun owners, American citizens, were going to have to give up their guns because Barack Obama got elected president. That, of course, never came to pass. He was in office for 8 years. American gun owners, you know, law-abiding citizens who own guns in Florida and around the country, never had any sort of, you know, threat to their rights to own guns. But with these mass shootings, it gives the opportunity to the NRA to employ their fear-based marketing message, which is, you know, give us money and go buy guns.
Would you expect the messages coming out of Dallas at the NRA convention this weekend, would you expect them to be toned down? Are they chastened by what happened in Parkland and now this rise of activism among young people who want to see something major done about gun violence?
I would deeply hope that you would see a shift in course from the NRA and from the president in their rhetoric and message around the gun violence crisis that this country faces. But that's not something, unfortunately, that I would expect to see from the NRA's leadership or from Donald Trump. You know, they have, you know, made their bed, right? They've had many opportunities to look at, you know, the problem of gun violence in this country, to sort of try and be part of the solution. We know, because, you know, we conduct extensive polling, that NRA members and gun owners themselves are totally out of sync with the NRA leadership. They support policies like universal background checks, getting guns out of the hands of domestic abusers, passing extreme risk protection red flag laws to make sure that people who are in crisis, who are a threat to themselves or to others, are able to relinquish their firearms. But the NRA continues this sort of hard right tack, talking, you know, sometimes they talk more about illegal immigration or terrorism, threat from the other than they do about guns themselves. So I think what we'll probably see in Dallas from Wayne LaPierre, from Chris Cox, from Donald Trump, from Mike Pence is, you know, not a message about gun safety and responsible gun ownership, which is a role that they should be playing, but rather one about why they believe Americans should be afraid, why government's coming for their guns, and, of course, why they need to double down on their political support for the industry, for the NRA, and for their chief cheerleaders in the White House, Donald Trump and Mike Pence.
Well, we're talking about the NRA convention that's this weekend in Dallas. The president is flying there right now to make a speech today. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. If you want to email a question in, too, that's the easiest way to do it. Just email a question in to us at dj@wmnf.org. Peter Ambler is our guest. He's executive director of the Gabby Giffords Gun Violence Prevention Organization called Giffords. And I want to ask you, you talked about the $30 million that the NRA spent on helping President Trump get elected. Here in Florida, $3 million was spent by the NRA helping Marco Rubio get elected to the U.S. Senate, reelected to the U.S. Senate. That money, that's a lot of money. Does most of that come from individual donors, or does it come from elsewhere?
You know, the sources of NRA financing are a bit opaque. They're hard to track. When we spend political money, it's in an FEC report. It's online donations averaging around $20. But when it comes to the NRA, they're spending dark money, right? So it's we believe money that comes from manufacturers, and there's been a lot of speculation that perhaps there's some foreign money as well.
So if foreign money were given to the NRA, at least right now, according to laws of our country, the NRA could hide it.
That would be a possibility. It's something that, you know, I fear may be true.
Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and you are listening to WMNF in Tampa. I want to ask you about Ted Nugent. He's got this line of guns that he calls spear chuckers. Ted Nugent is, at least the last I looked, he was on the board of the NRA. He's a rock and roll musician. In the early days, he was a draft resistor, draft dodger. He's had problems with having sex with underage girls. But Ted Nugent is now a champion of the NRA. What do you make of him offering these weapons, the spear chuckers?
I mean, Ted Nugent is a racist. It's obviously a ploy to play on, you know, people's racist fears. I could spend 20 minutes just, you know, going down the line, sort of referencing all the outrageous things that Ted Nugent has said and done. But like you said, he's on the NRA board. He continues these sort of screeds, sort of, racist rants when he's talking about his support of the NRA, and the NRA keeps him on its board. He's, you know, joined on the NRA board by many other sort of similar people who, you know, smell and feel a lot like alt-right activists. And it just sort of goes to my previous point that, you know, the NRA is not an organization that's standing up for average gun owners. It's an organization that's become, you know, a pillar of the extreme right ideological conservative movement in the United States. That's a strategic decision that the NRA has obviously made. It helps them market, gun ownership to a certain segment of the American population, but it has separated them from the mainstream of both, you know, American gun owners and also American politics.
I want to read to you from the Orlando Sentinel this morning, and I wasn't aware of this, but let me just read a few paragraphs. And the Orlando Sentinel is reporting that the race is on to let Florida voters decide whether to ban assault-style weapons. Two ballot amendments, campaigns recently launched, one by a congressman and a mayor touched by the Parkland tragedy, the other led by a 79-year-old Boynton Beach businessman who once helped get a constitutional amendment passed in his native Iowa. Congressman Ted Deutsch of Boca and Coral Springs Mayor Skip Campbell are leading a political committee called Ban Assault Weapons Now that's working to get an initiative on the 2020 ballot here in Florida restricting the sale of AR-15-style rifles. A Florida Atlantic University poll conducted in the weeks after the Parkland shooting found 69% of Floridians in support of a ban on assault-style rifles. And I won't read the rest. People can look up the article themselves. So it looks like there are two groups trying to get measures on the ballot in 2020 to restrict the sale of assault-style weapons. Does your group, does the Giffords organization, take a position on these proposed bans?
We don't have a specific position on either of the two ballot initiatives, and I haven't read through the language on either. Certainly, Florida voters should have the opportunity to decide whether or not they would support a ban on assault rifles. And what we saw in the legislature in the aftermath of the Parkland shooting is that the outrage generated by that act and the leadership of the young people from South Florida and across the state, generated a remarkable sort of shift in what you would have otherwise expected from the legislature. And there were some actual significant productive things that the legislature did, despite the fact that they tacked on the outrageous, guns in schools, army and teachers proposal. But what the legislature didn't allow was passage of an assault weapons ban, which is obviously a priority of the Parkland students. As long as, you've got Marion Hammer, the NRA's chief lobbyist in Florida, sort of pulling strings in the Florida legislature, it's going to be difficult for, such a piece of legislation, an assault weapons ban that so directly threatens the profit streams of the gun industry, to actually see the light of day. And that's why ballot initiatives make sense.
What's your sense of where this is heading? Because the Parkland students are very active. High school students all over the Tampa Bay area have been active. Thousands and thousands have walked out in protest of gun violence. What do you think's achievable? What do you think the public would like to see regarding reducing gun violence?
I'm glad you asked about the Parkland students, because I think why they've been so successful at igniting this sort of national outrage and movement is because they have these twin messages that they've sort of artfully intertwined that sort of others have been unable to make stick, and that's one. We're kids, you're adults, you've failed to protect us. One of the fundamental responsibilities of any society is to protect the vulnerable, to protect the voiceless. And of course, if you're 15 or 16 years old, you're not able to participate in the political system officially, and you're depending on the adults to keep you safe. We, the adults, the politicos, the elected officials, failed to protect kids. And that is a deeply, disturbing thing for the American people, and is one reason why you've seen such outrage. Two, they've pointed at the political corruption inherent in the NRA's involvement in our political system as being a core reason why we've been unable to protect people. And that just outrages folks even further. So I think what you're going to see over the next 6 months, in addition to some of these ballot initiative proposals gaining traction, is voters channeling their outrage at the politicians who have failed to protect kids and voting them out and voting into office instead, courageous leaders who are going to use the opportunity in service to pass legislation that will reduce gun violence. And if we're able to do that, we're going to be able to make some, immediate progress. We're going to be able to do things in Congress, for example, if Democrats, you know, take back the House and perhaps even the Senate, finally funding after 22 years research at the CDC into gun violence prevention. The NRA and its allies in Congress have gone about for decades working to starve the CDC, the NIH, and our other sort of public health agencies of the money they would need to study one of the principal sources of mortality in this country.
You know, I don't understand why the NRA would oppose that. I mean, just to get basic information, accurate information about gun violence in the U.S. and have a fair agency like the NIH or the CDC or some other government agency just study it and keep the records for the whole country. I know Mother Jones Magazine has an ongoing list of gun violence incidents, but it would be nice to have, a government agency have that list. Why would the NRA be so opposed to having a scientific study about gun violence?
Well, they don't want to. They're scared of the results. Why did the tobacco industry, hide the fact that nicotine was addictive, that cigarettes were harmful for your health? Because they knew that, if impartial truth were to come to light, that it would reflect poorly on their product. In the case of firearms, you're talking about the most dangerous, lethal, risky consumer product, ever invented in human history. Now, that's not to say that we can't have a country where, responsible law-abiding people are able to, with proper oversight, own firearms. However, that's not the approach you would take if you're the firearms manufacturers and you want to make as much money as possible. So what the NRA is deeply disturbed about is the prospect of objective, evidence-based research coming out and showing exactly how risky it is for us to have the proliferation of firearms in our society that we currently have with so few regulations.
We're talking with Peter Ambler, and he is executive director of Gabby Gifford's Gun Violence Prevention Organization. He's on the phone with us right now. Peter, before I let you go, I just want to play something back from the NRA, and this was put up by the NRA a few months ago, and I just want you to listen to it, and I want to get your comment about it.
We have thoroughly expressed and will continue to express your principles and point of view to the President, members of Congress, and the media. When it comes to the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution and the due process principles upon which our nation stands, the NRA will never, ever waver. We stand clearly and proudly for individual freedom and the absolute protection of the entire Bill of Rights, including our 5th and 14th Amendments. And when it comes to the issues being debated, we will reject any proposal that fails to respect the ultimate authority of every law-abiding American's individual freedom. At a time when American parents so desperately want their leaders to focus on meaningful solutions to protect their children, we are saddened and frustrated that too many have chosen instead to focus on a politically motivated agenda that has nothing to do with keeping kids safe. When it comes to the safety of our politicians, our celebrities, and our sports stars, the answer is clear: armed security. It's the only security solution that has proven to work, which is why the National Rifle Association has called repeatedly for trained armed security in every American school. But instead of doing whatever it takes to harden our schools immediately, some of the political class offer old, failed gun control policies that represent a direct attack on Second Amendment freedom.
That was Wayne LaPierre from the NRA website talking about what their stand is, toning down a bit of what Dana Loesch said earlier this year on the NRA website. We might play that a little bit later on. What did you make of Wayne LaPierre's latest message about where they stand?
Well, first of all, it's the same sort of fear-based screed that we've come to expect from the NRA. If you don't sort of follow their agenda, your guns will be confiscated, and you'll be left defenseless. It's sort of interesting that they suggest, you know, putting law enforcement in schools because, you know, another core element of their message is that law enforcement can't protect you, and that's why you need to own guns. But putting that aside, it's important for Americans to recognize that, you know, the solution to gun violence, the solutions to our public safety aren't to sort of harden every single institution in this country, for example, schools. It's not to wall ourselves off against sort of, you know, people that might want to do us harm. And, you know, we've recently seen this. Obviously, we had the tragic shooting in Parkland, and schools should be made as safe as possible. But then you've got the Waffle House shooting and, you know, acts of gun violence that occur, like, in our streets, in people's homes. The answer to this problem is borne out time and time by the limited amount of research and evidence that we're able to collect, is that we need to make sure that we keep guns out of the hands of people who aren't supposed to have them, who are irresponsible, who are too young, who are suffering from severe mental illness, who are felons, who are otherwise demonstrating dangerousness and risk. There are studies that show the efficacy of laws. For example, in 2007, in the state of Missouri, they had a permit to purchase background checks law on the books there. Required simply that, you know, if you want to buy a gun, you have to get a permit. To get the permit, you have to get a background check. It's law enforcement oversight. It's probably what most Americans think the law is everywhere, but it's not. Missouri legislature in 2007 repealed that law, and a team of researchers from Johns Hopkins studied the aftermath and concluded that directly attributable to the repeal of that law was a 25% increase in gun violence in that state, year in and year out, which, you know, think about this, led to about 70, 75 people every year in the state of Missouri dying from gun violence who otherwise would have lived. And that is the, you know, honest, sobering, sad truth of the NRA political agenda, that we're less able to keep our kids, our community safe because we're unable to, you know, pass laws, protect the laws that we need to ensure our public safety.
The president will be there in Dallas today, and it's a gun-free zone where the NRA convention is. I thought it was interesting that when the president went to Saudi Arabia and was with the Saudi princes, they were allowed to have swords. So apparently the Secret Service trusted the Saudi Arabians to have swords near President Trump and previous presidents. But the Secret Service doesn't trust the NRA members to get close to the president with their guns. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's the contrast between evidence and rhetoric, right? You know, the NRA would have you believe that the more guns there are, the safer we will all be. That defies common sense. And then, of course, when it comes down to protecting their own events, to protecting the safety of their own members and the speakers at their convention, that you know, firearms would not be allowed, because that would be an invitation for chaos, injury, and danger.
Mm. Peter, do you have a few more minutes?
Sure.
All right. If you've got time, I don't want to eat too much into your day, but we're talking with Peter Ambler. He's executive director of Gabby Giffords Gun Violence Prevention Organization. It's called Giffords. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to saving lives from gun violence, and it's led by former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords and her husband, Navy combat veteran, retired NASA astronaut Captain Mark Kelly. And our phone number is 813-239-9663. You can also send your email into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Chris, who's in Tampa. Chris, you're on the air with Peter Ambler.
Good morning. And, Rob, I would hope that you don't turn down my volume in the middle of speaking, as you did last time when I mentioned the Parkland inconsistencies and called me a conspiracy theorist. I find it interesting that the conspiracy theorists know that Lee Harvey Oswald did not kill JFK, James Earl Ray did not kill Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and as I was trying to explain, that Nicholas Cruz did not commit, or I suspect that he did not commit the massacre at Parkland.
Chris, if I were to call you a nut job, what would you say?
Well, as I was trying to explain the facts before...
Well, just give us one fact where you think Nicholas Cruz did not commit the killing, and why do you think all those police officers and detectives and FBI people in Parkland are wrong?
Well, the police officers, as you know, stood down, as is the case whenever there's...
But give us one example of where you think...
Rob, you're going to turn down my volume, I understand, and then interrupt and then cut me off, as you often do.
Well, Chris, so the problem is that you don't get to the point. So just make a point. Give us one fact that proves that Cruz was not the shooter in Parkland.
You're interrupting me.
No, just give us one. You know, Chris, you talk about all these conspiracy theories. You have your own website. You call every WMNF show. Frankly, I don't like people who are nutty, who don't have facts. So just, I will give you one chance. Give us one fact that you have that proves that Cruz was not the shooter in Parkland. Just one fact.
Teacher Ernest Rospierski said the school was having a scheduled code red drill where officers were going to be firing blanks and the shooter had on a mask. Teacher Stacy LaPelle said the shooter was wearing full metal body armor, a helmet, and a face mask. These are on video interviews. That was Good Morning America, Stacy LaPelle. When interviewed by Matt Musil, KHOU reporter, student Alexa Meenick said she was speaking with Nicholas Cruz as the shooting was happening. She made no mention of him with a mask or other garb.
All right, I'm going to have to fact check that, and I'm not going to take your word for it. I will not take your word for it because you have called in so many times with so many crazy conspiracies. You bring down the quality of the call-in shows. There's a lot of smart people out there who are listening. I want them to call in too. Chris, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call. Peter, there are a lot of conspiracy theorists. What would you say back to Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're seeing here is it's just a sad sort of, you know, reality of the public discourse. When any of these mass shootings happen, these conspiracy theorists pop up, these so-called truthers. They harass the survivors. They defame the victims. And there is a, you know, conservative media machine out there led by people like Alex Jones that's more than happy to sort of trample on the, you know, the graves of people who died tragically because of our inability as a, you know, country to protect them, and you know, generate anger and fear based on that. One thing you probably won't hear at the NRA convention today and this weekend is any denunciation of those people. Mm. Because they sort of, you know, depend on having those same supporters.
Peter, if we were to fact check the conspiracy theories surrounding Parkland, or if we were to fact check the conspiracy theories surrounding Newtown, suggesting that these people are actors. In Newtown, there's no dead people. What would we find? And we can't do it on this show. We can't do justice to, you know, fact-checking everything. But what would we find, would you say, if we fact-checked what Chris just said?
You obviously find that... you know, the only thing that, you know, Chris offers are the ramblings of, as you said, a nut job. You know, I worked for Gabby when she got shot. I've, you know, spent many hours with the survivors of the Newtown tragedy, with people who have sort of been survivors of various other mass shootings. That's a sad part of the work that I do. And, you know, these are real victims. These are, you know, real survivors with heavy, heavy hearts. You know, nearly 39,000 people died from gunshot wounds in the United States in 2016. Many more people than that were shot. There is a real, actual human cost to gun violence.
Would it say that it demonstrates that people like Alex Jones, I mean, Alex Jones is a big guy who thinks that everybody should have an AR-15. Would it demonstrate that they feel like they're losing because they have to grasp at straws?
Absolutely. I mean, they're defending a product and sort of a hobby and a way of life in this country that, you know, produces, you know, hundreds of thousands of victims every year, that leaves the trail of bloodshed, sorrow, economic loss, wasted opportunity. And, you know, I think there are certain people that aren't able to live with themselves, who aren't able to sort of, you know, face the facts and account for the sort of the sort of great American tragedy that they've let occur. So if you can't face the facts, then you're going to create your own alternative facts. And that's, you know, the sort of idea of alternative facts is something that you see from the NRA, who say things like, you know, gun laws don't work, when of course we know that they do because we have ample evidence.
Let's go to Betty in Sarasota. Betty, thanks for calling in. What's your question or comment?
Oh, my God. Jeez, I think this guy, Chris, is the beyond, and he unfortunately does represent a huge percent of our population. I wish you'd just ban him from the air already, Rob, and I'm so glad that you called him on it. I'm so glad.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we should ban him, but I think we should call him out, and I think we should be straight with our listeners when somebody says something that is completely bizarre. I mean, I've fact-checked some of what Chris has said in the past. I don't have my notes in front of me, unfortunately, but I will. You know, we'll play that video again that fact-checks a lot of these crazy theories. So, Betty, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, and I don't think you should have to even dignify any of his comments. I'd just like to make two comments or questions, whatever. The first is, I think we need to hold the parents of these deranged people, these deranged killers, responsible, either fully or partially. And, for instance, if you look at the Columbine killers, if you look at the Sandy Hook killer, who was obviously a very mentally disturbed person, she knew it, yet she continued to have guns and probably even had him trained to use guns. You know, these people need to be held accountable when their kids perpetrate these horrific crimes. I do, because they enable them on some level or even fully. So I think that, and also just the complete disingenuousness of the NRA. They don't care about people being killed, Rob. They really don't give a damn. For them, it's just what collateral damage. It's just like they're in a state of rage and war. People even go on my Facebook page, people that I used to think were reasonable, go on and on. They're Christian right, partial, sometimes evangelical, just people who are seething, who are angry, who have issues with the government. They think that everybody's trying to take their gun away, and they use this quote-unquote Second Amendment. So they sound historical, they sound intelligent, because they know something about the Second Amendment, and they give it this historical context. And of course, most of the time, they don't have a clue. These people are very, very dangerous, and I love your guests and everything you had to say. So I so appreciate your program. It's just fantastic.
Thank All right, Betty, so thanks a lot. Peter, what about holding, thanks, Betty, what about holding parents responsible? What do you think about that?
It's important. I mean, child access prevention is a big part of our agenda. You know, oftentimes, you know, tragedy occurs and the response from law enforcement is that, you know, the parents have suffered enough, which of course is true. You lose a child you know, What more punishment could you possibly heap on a parent? But accountability is important. And just sort of, you know, there are some really shocking, you know, stats out there. According to researchers, roughly a million kids who live in homes with easily accessible firearms. It's basically a third of handguns that are kept loaded and unlocked. Parents typically think that, you know, they've successfully duped the kids, that they've sort of hidden the location from them. But as any parent knows, kids are also smarter than you give them credit for. I have a 1.5-year-old, and, you know, she gives me a run for my money. There was a 2006 study that showed that 73% of children under the age of 10 reported knowing where in their house the guns were located, with 36% of those kids admitting that they had handled those guns.
Wow.
And at the same time, 39% of parents said that the kids did not know where the guns were. So clearly there's this delta here where, you know, parents think that they're secured the gun from the kid, but the kid actually knows where the gun is and is, in many cases, handling it, which is an invitation to tragedy.
We're talking about the president's speech today at the NRA convention. It's about to happen. Peter Ambler is our guest. He's executive director of the Gabby Giffords Gun Violence Prevention Organization, a national organization. Peter, I want to ask you about the recent mass shootings. Getting to the point of responsibility, were all of the weapons in the recent mass shootings, whether it be Las Vegas or Parkland or Newtown or some of the other mass shootings in Denver, there have been dozens of them in the last 2 years, were they all legally purchased?
I think many of them were. You know, that goes to the fact that, you know, oftentimes, you know, our, you know, laws are at this point insufficient. You know, we can do more to identify folks who are, you know, at risk of, you know, committing heinous acts of violence. For example, one of our top priorities in the law that we actually helped pass in Florida was this extreme risk protection order law, which is also referred to as a red flag law. When these, you know, acts of violence occur, oftentimes, you know, in the aftermath, you know, people ask themselves, like, what could I have done? And without these laws, the answer is oftentimes very, very little. So what these extreme risk laws allow you to do, if you are, for example, a family member, if you work for a school, if you're a law enforcement official, is go to a court and petition the court to temporarily relieve a particular individual of their access to guns. And, you know, we only have passed those now in a few states, in California, Oregon, Washington, Connecticut has a longer standing law. It says Indiana. Now we have them in Florida. And in the aftermath of Parkland passed in several more states. But for every 10 of these orders issued, you know, researchers have estimated that we're saving somebody's life. So that is, you know, a really important thing that we can do to stop some of these sort of more heinous acts of gun violence. It's also important to recognize that the media makes mass shootings a much larger part of our country's gun violence problem than they actually are. There were, like I said before, in 2016, the last year for which we had data, nearly 40,000 people who died from gunshot wounds and over 100,000 who were shot. Very few of those people were shot, killed, injured in so-called mass shooting types of incidents that have generated so much media attention. Our responsibility, of course, as citizens, as politicians, as gun violence prevention advocates, is to look at this problem like the public health emergency that it is, employ strategies that we know are going to be successful to bring down over time the number of people who are shot every year in this country. It's what we've done with virtually every other source of death and mortality, automobiles, smoking, et cetera, et cetera.
All right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, let me take some more phone calls. Tim is in Sarasota. Tim, you're on the air with Peter Ambler, the executive director of the Giffords organization. What would you like to say?
I'm sorry. I heard, you know, when I turned the radio on, I heard some lunatic on there talking about the MLK and the JFK assassination. I didn't know if it was open.
No, it's not open. We're talking about the president's appearance at the NRA convention today, Tim.
I think... Donald Trump, I think he cares about these shootings and that, you know, he wants something done. I think at the beginning he did. But then after a while, when he found out how far the NRA's tentacles reach out, I think I don't think there's anything that anybody can do, any politicians. They're never going to take the gun law away. What happened in Connecticut several years ago with the children that were massacred when Obama was president, we thought something was going to happen then. All the ammo flew off the shelves at all the Walmarts, and you had to wait 3 or 4 days for a new batch to come in. Everybody was stockpiling it. Nothing happened then. Nothing happened after this Vegas shooting. Nothing's going to happen.
All right,
They're
Tim, thanks a lot.
Do anything with it.
Tim, thanks a lot. Thanks for your comments. All right, so there you go, Peter, a cynic. He says nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I on one hand understand, you know, a cynic's perspective in this debate. You know, tens of thousands of people die every year from something that's preventable, and we as a country sort of fail to address it. That's deeply disheartening. And, you know, in our politics generally, which are oftentimes so poisonous and toxic, it's easy to get more cynical still. But it is important for people to recognize that, you know, that the change is on the way, that change even in drips and drops is happening as we speak. The caller mentioned the Sandy Hook shooting. Before that happened, there wasn't even a gun violence prevention movement to speak of. My organization didn't exist. It wasn't until Sandy Hook that Gabby Giffords, Mark Kelly, myself, and others decided, you know, we needed to say enough and stand up and actually do something. Before that, Mayor Bloomberg hadn't committed, you know, tens of millions of dollars to his organization. Millions of Americans hadn't gotten off of the sidelines and said enough. And every time one of these horrific things happening, people are outraged. And there's this additive effect that, you know, creates ultimately the impetus for change. Over the past 5 years, while it isn't the comprehensive national solution that we need and demand, we have been able to pass over 200 new gun laws in 45 different states across the country. Some of them have been very significant. Universal background check laws now are the law of the land in states that cover roughly half of the American population. We've passed over 25 new state laws in the months since the Parkland shooting. And we see for the first time in a long time in the lead up to the 2018 elections, Americans not only sort of agreeing with us on the policy, but saying, like, not only do I sort of, you know, support you in background checks, not only am I outraged at the NRA, but I'm going to vote on this issue. I'm going to look at the candidates in the races, see who I agree with, like who takes money from the NRA versus who's willing to stand up for solutions to prevent gun violence. And I'm going to vote for that champion for safety.
We've gotten a lot of emails in. DeMarco writes, the CDC previously found that access to firearms raised the probability of gun deaths, and that the solution to reduce gun deaths was to lower the volume of guns on U.S. streets and reduce access to firearms. That's why the NRA is against studying gun violence, writes DeMarco. Lori writes, this is Trump the first president to attend the NRA convention and at taxpayer cost. Such a shame, writes Lori. And Terry in St. Pete writes, to all those conspiracy theorists like your nutjob caller, I challenge them to man up and go face-to-face with the parents of those killed at Parkland or Sandy Hook and tell them the shooting was staged and that their kids were not killed. So just a few of the emails that have come in. Peter, did you want to respond? Is President Trump the first president in recent years? I think you mentioned this before, to attend the NRA convention.
In recent years, certainly, and he's done it 3 years in a row. You know, the NRA was one of the only sort of outside organizations to sort of throw caution to the wind and invest early and often. Donald Trump spending a record, you know, $50 million over the course of the election cycle on the politicians that they supported, including over $30 million for Donald Trump. What you are seeing in Donald Trump's repeated appearances in front of the NRA, going shoulder to shoulder with its executives and supporters on stage, is pure political payback, plain and simple.
Let's go to our next caller, Nathaniel in Gulfport. Nathaniel, you're on the air with Peter Ambler with the Gabby Giffords Gun Violence Prevention Organization.
Great show. Thanks a lot for having me. I can't wait to go home and look up some of this information. One of the things I just wanted to do is really just inject a few facts that, pro-gun conspiracy theory people always love to forget. And one of them is that the NRA constantly deals in a state of delusion. They almost never in print or in their logo designs ever mention the first part of the Second Amendment, that a well-regulated militia being necessary. They always leave that part out because they just don't want anyone to think about the word regulated and Second Amendment, except for the word is there, so they are denying reality. The other thing that's hilarious that Trump is even starting to do again is that Democrats are going to come for your guns. 2018, you better vote, or they're going to come for your guns. Just like Barack Obama did, right? Well, excuse me, but Barack Obama signed two bills regarding guns. Both of them gave back rights taken away from Republicans by Republicans, or gun owners by Republicans, and the other one extending their rights to take them into national parks. So it's almost impossible to have a logical conversation with these folks unless you sit them down in a library and show them historical facts, because they just swim in delusion. And
I fear they don't trust libraries either. Nathaniel, thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks for the light.
Thanks, Nathaniel. Peter, we're down to the end of the show. Is there anything more that you want to add to this conversation?
You'll hear a lot at the NRA convention this week about one part of the Constitution, that's the Second Amendment. The caller, of course, referenced the fact that there's a lot more ambiguity about that language than the NRA is going to sort of talk about. But there is a more important part of the Constitution that the NRA is not going to be spending as much time on, and that's what every citizen has the ability to do to sort of change the path of this country if they so choose, and that's their ability to vote. We had an unprecedented opportunity this year in 2018 to be able to vote out the politicians who have taken those NRA A ratings, who have taken tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars from the NRA and have, as a result, failed to protect our kids, failed to protect our communities from gun violence. This election should be a referendum on the politicians' inability to protect us from gun violence. In the state of Florida, there's going to be a really important race at the top of the ballot. You have Bill Nelson, who is a committed public servant, who's been a consistent supporter of solutions to protect kids from gun violence, and he's up against, as we know, the state's current governor, Rick Scott. Now, let's talk a little bit about Rick Scott. He's somebody who, being scared of the sort of the political movement that I just referenced, sort of tried to sort of cut to the middle and pass a few gun safety laws in the aftermath of Parkland, but he's somebody who's otherwise stood as an obstacle to gun safety during his entire tenure as governor.
Peter, I'm sorry to say we're out of time. How can people find out more about Giffords?
Go to giffords.org, sign up, learn how to vote, where to vote, and who to vote for. We'd love to have your help this election cycle.
All right, Peter Ambler, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF. Peter is the executive director of the Gabby Giffords Gun Violence Prevention Organization, Giffords, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. Speaking of gun violence, Ohio, the Kent State Massacre happened 48 years ago today. This is WMNF in Tampa. Stay tuned for Daniel Ruth. He's coming up in the next hour. And thanks to Patty Perkey for being our phone producer today.